From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Joining me on the program is Tonette Seitz, assistant producer in VOA's English division. Our guest on this edition of the program is Tom Gelton, national public radio correspondent and author of the recently published book, A Nation of Nations, A Great American Immigration Story. To say that America is a nation of immigrants is essentially a truism, but the story of immigration to the United States is neither linear nor monolithic. For the first 200 years of the country's history, most of the foreigners who settled here voluntarily were European and white. In 1965, however, legislators rewrote restrictive U.S. immigration laws, and over the past 50 years, the foreign-born population has become far more diverse, with new immigrants hailing from South America, Asia, the Middle East, and Africa. In his book, Gelton underscores the transformational effects of the Immigration and Naturalization Act of 1965, which abolished discriminatory quotas that barred most immigrants from outside of Northwestern Europe, increased family-based immigration, and allowed for more legal immigration. Before 1965, the percentage of immigrants in the United States was only 4.4%. Today, in large part thanks to the 1965 legislation, it stands at about 13%. In his book, A Nation of Nations, Tom Gelton amplifies a microcosm of that immigrant population by honing in on a handful of immigrant families from El Salvador, Bolivia, Libya, and Korea living in Fairfax County in the state of Virginia. Tom Gelton worked as a correspondent for National Public Radio since 1982. He has served as a labor and education reporter, then became one of NPR's pioneer foreign correspondents, serving around the globe from Latin America, including Cuba, to Eastern Europe and the Middle East. Eventually, he became NPR's lead Pentagon reporter. Gelton was, in fact, reporting live from the Pentagon at the moment it was attacked on September 11, 2001. He currently covers issues of religion, faith, and belief for NPR. And Tom Gelton joins us here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Carol. It's great to be here.
And I'm delighted to welcome my colleague, Tonette Seitz.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, Tom, congratulations on your timely book.
Thank you. You know, Carol, I didn't expect it to be quite as timely when I wrote it. I started working on this a few years ago. I knew that immigration is a kind of enduring issue in American politics, but I had no idea it would become as timely as it did.
Indeed. But what prompted you to write it in the first place?
Well, I have been interested for a long time, especially since I covered the war in Bosnia, interestingly enough, which was, in my view, really a war over identities. It was really a war about how people defined themselves, and the clash of identities, the clash of religions and ethnicities really produced that war. Since then, I've been interested in sort of this whole issue of national identity. It took me a few years to figure out a way to approach it here in the United States, but with the anniversary of the 1965 Immigration Act coming up, the 50th anniversary, which was in October of last year, I saw the opportunity to really look at how America has changed over the last 50 years, and really the question of what does it mean to be American, and what does the idea of America stand for?
I'd like to turn to my colleague Tonette for a question.
Right. So what drew you to Fairfax County as a possible location for the book's premise in the first place, considering Fairfax's incredibly diverse county now versus its segregated history in the past?
Well, that's exactly right, Tonette. I mean, it's the transformation that has taken place in Fairfax County. I won't say it's exactly a microcosm of the rest of the country because it's been more dramatic in Fairfax County than it has been in most areas of the country. But for me, that only served to highlight what are the issues involved as a community, as a society becomes more diverse. I mean, at the time of the passage of the 1965 Act, Fairfax County was about 90% white. It was about 9.5% African American, but the African American population lived in segregated neighborhoods. They went to segregated schools, and Fairfax County was largely rural. So over the next 50 years, it really went through three separate traumatic changes. First was desegregation, which is traumatic for any community. It went through urbanization, going from being a rural community to being a very populous suburban area, and it experienced this enormous immigration influx. So in 1965, the 1965 Act was passed. Less than 1% of the population of Fairfax County was immigrant. Now it is above 30%. Between 30 and 40% of the residents of Fairfax County were born outside the United States. So there are few places that have been as transformed by immigration as Fairfax County has been. So I thought it would be a good place to look at what does that do to the fabric of the society? What does it do to the sense of community in a place like that? And the other thing is about the particular immigrant population in Fairfax County. It's very diverse, and they don't live in enclaves the way that immigrants have often settled in the United States in the past, where you have a, you know, a Little Italy or a Chinatown or something like that. That doesn't exist in Fairfax County. The immigrant population there is mixed in and of themselves. So it was, to me, an ideal place to look at how immigration changes a country.
So what did you conclude, Tom, from your extensive interviews with people from Korea, Bolivia, from El Salvador, and other places? What has been the impact, in your view, on the community of this incredibly diverse set of immigrants?
Well, to answer that, Carol, I'd go back to the debate around the 1965 Act itself. And the issues that the prospect of that legislation raised were that America has a European heritage, and if you bring in non-European immigrants, you're going to introduce kind of social fragmentation, you're going to introduce ethnic conflict, cultural conflict. You know, the new immigrant populations are not going to assimilate as well as previous immigrant populations. You're going to introduce conflict into the United States and raise the prospect of divisions along ethnic lines, and sort of the character of the United States could suffer. The conclusion that I came to after spending a lot of time in Fairfax County is that America has actually proved to be really resilient. It's proved to be a nation that is actually capable of incorporating, integrating new, very diverse populations, populations with cultural backgrounds very different from the people who lived here before. So in that sense, it's, you know, a very hopeful, I would say optimistic lesson. You know, I found that the families that I interviewed at this point feel thoroughly American, feel committed to the idea of America. They have their own unique understandings of what America stands for and what America means to them, but they feel American and they feel proud of this country, and it does mean something to them. So I would say that's the main lesson that I drew.
So a true assimilation in the true sense of the word. Let's go back to the 1965 Immigration and Naturalization Act that encouraged this wave of immigration. Talk about what was the main impetus for it, especially as it contrasts with the previous law from the quota law from 1924.
Well, as you say, before that, the United States selected immigrants on the basis of their national origin, which meant that if you came from a part of the world where we considered to be desirable, that was actually the word that was used, you know, if you came a part of the world that produced good immigrants, you got a big quota. So the countries of Northern and Western Europe had tens of thousands of immigrant visa slots reserved for them each year. The countries of Asia, Africa, the Middle East, each had only about 100 visa slots a year reserved for them. So you saw, through the use of these quotas, a real deliberate effort to bring in European immigrants and exclude non-European immigrants. Well, those quotas were in effect for, as you say, from 1924 up until 1965. Why did they change in 1965? Well, remember, the country at that time was going through a lot of introspection and reflection. This was the time of the Civil Rights Movement. 1964 saw the passage of the Civil Rights Act. In 1965, the same year the Immigration Act was passed, we had the Voting Rights Act. President Lyndon Johnson had a huge majority in Congress at that time. He took advantage of that majority to pass a lot of progressive legislation. To this day, we haven't seen such a quantity of progressive legislation passed in such a short amount of time as the Great Society programs of the middle 1960s. So in the context of that time, in the spirit of the moment when there was a lot of attention finally being paid to issues of equity and social justice, members of Congress looked at our immigration policy, and what they saw was a policy that was essentially racist, that discriminated against people on the basis of their nationality, regardless of what kind of other attributes they saw. And they saw in that situation something that really needed to be changed, just as our civil rights laws had to be changed.
So a direct linkage between the passage of the 1965 Immigration and Naturalization Act and the civil rights movement.
Absolutely. In fact, Hubert Humphrey, who was vice president at the time, said shortly after the passage of the Civil Rights Act, we have now eliminated the basis for second-class citizenship. Now we have to eliminate the basis for second-class immigration status.
Tonette, for a question.
So, in your book, you touched on the debate over whether America is a great melting pot or a cultural mosaic. How do you distinguish between these concepts, and which one is a more accurate characterization of America's inherent diversity?
That's a really great question, Tonette, and it's one that's been debated a lot. Carol, you used the word assimilation before. Interestingly enough, some people object to that term, because whether you're talking about a melting pot or you're talking about assimilation, there's a kind of an assumption that everybody turns out in the end to be the same, that, you know, their differences sort of melt away and the different cultures assimilate to produce sort of this single, unvariegated American identity that doesn't really have distinguishing characteristics. And I think one of the challenges that this new immigration has brought to the country is it has forced us to think a little bit more carefully about those terms. And I think that the way that this question has been resolved is that we have had to come up with a new sense of what we means in America. It's not that we are all the same. And because, you know, to the extent that you emphasize the melting pot ideal or just say everybody should assimilate, what you're essentially saying to immigrants from Africa or, you know, Muslims from the Middle East or South Asia or Asians, Koreans, Chinese, is that somehow you're going to have to become like us. But that's impossible. They have different religions. They have very different cultural traditions. They speak very different languages. As hard as they may try, they will never be able to become like us in a kind of a single way. So I think that one of the things that we have had to do in the last 50 years as a nation is figure out what does it mean to be American without denying the differences that clearly exist.
No, I think you're absolutely right, and we have to be careful when we use words like assimilation. And I think what I mean is that America is very diverse just inherently now, and we have and we should be proud of having multiple identities.
Right.
But there is a baseline. There are rule of law. There are certain values that we all hold dear, but
yes,
we might speak a different language,
right,
or use a different spice. And
yeah,
I think that makes us very unique.
Exactly, Carol. I think that this is one of the things that we have learned during this time. There's this notion called American exceptionalism. You know, it goes all the way back to the days of Alexis de Tocqueville, the French writer who traveled to the United States in the early part of the 19th century. He was the first person to identify the United States as an exceptional nation. And the reason that he found it exceptional was that he said that when people come here, they are judged on the basis of what they offer to the country and not on their class, not on their origins, not on their ancestry. John Quincy Adams said that Americans look forward to their posterity rather than backward to their ancestry. So what is that idea that unites Americans then if it is not their ancestry? I think it's more of an ideological notion. You know, it's the matter of believing in kind of the American creed, which involves individualism, self-reliance, egalitarianism. There are a lot of sort of aspects to it, but it's really a sense of identity or citizenship that is based on ideas and not bloodline.
You're listening to Press Conference USA on The Voice of America. Our guest is Tom Gelton, a longtime correspondent for National Public Radio and author of Nation of Nations, A Great American Immigration Story. I'm Carol Castiel, along with Tonette Seitz. She's assistant producer in VOA's English division. This is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to Inu Zaz from Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to you, Tom Gelton, author of A Nation of Nations. I think we would be remiss if we didn't talk about the current political climate with the election of Donald Trump. And I think we need to remind our listeners also that before the 1965 legislation, we had an immigration law which was based on quotas. And the historical and cultural context is important to point out that this law essentially barred refugees fleeing from conflict, from the Holocaust in particular. We had quotas. And I'm hearing even today, some people are worried that maybe we're going back with the kind of language we've heard during the campaign. Mr. Trump made immigration a very big theme in his campaign. How concerned are you about the rhetoric from the Trump campaign, which borders on xenophobic, almost demonization of the other, singling out of Muslims, the denigration of Mexicans? There's a lot of talk about the importance of national security. We hear the slogan, take our country back, as if immigrants, undocumented or legal, and refugees somehow pose a danger, detract from rather than enhance our nation. What is your take on all of this?
You know, as I said at the beginning, I didn't expect my book was going to be all that timely in this election. And that's because I figured that to the extent immigration was to be an issue, it would really be about, as you say, illegal immigration. Because I was looking at a very deliberate, conscious decision by the United States to change its immigration policy, I was, by definition, interested in legal immigration. All the people I write about in my book came here legally. They are people who came here in one way or another as a consequence of the 1965 legislation. I do not get into the issues of amnesty and border protection and things like that. But one of the things that surprised me that we have seen in this election is the debate has actually gone into the legal immigration policy questions as well as illegal immigration. One of President-elect Trump's closest advisors is Senator Jeff Sessions, who has long been an advocate for cutting back even on legal immigration. He thinks even legal immigration should be reduced in this country. And Donald Trump, in his one major speech on immigration policy delivered in Phoenix the same day that he went to Mexico to meet with President Peña Nieto of Mexico, he talked about changing our immigration policy to bring about immigration levels based on population share within historical norms. I might have got a word or two wrong there, but that's essentially what he said. And to me, when I heard that line, it almost sounded like he was saying, we maybe need to reconsider the 1965 Act, because it's that act that established those population shares. Prior to that, interestingly, national origin quotas were based on a formula of what the United States looked like in 1890. The idea was to replicate the ethnic mix the United States had in 1890. So the quotas reflected, all right, what percentage of Americans came from Europe? What percentage came from the other countries? Let's keep those same percentages. And when Donald Trump talked about population share by historical norms, it almost sounded to me like he was saying, maybe we should go back to that point where we are selecting people on the basis of where they come from. That would be a real retreat. That would be a retreat from 50 years of policy. And several other things that he has said suggest that he might be open to judging immigrants on the basis of their national origin, as opposed to the skills or the attributes or the family ties that they may have. So I figured, as I think you probably did, that this debate was over, that we had settled this issue of who could be American and who could come. I fear, personal opinion, I fear that we may now sort of be reconsidering that, and we may be moving back to that point where we actually do consider potential immigrants on the basis of their national origin.
We've certainly spoken to people who are perfectly legal here in the United States. They're of different nationalities. They may be Muslim or of another religion that is different from the so-called norm or what we normally associate white European Americans to be. And there certainly is a level of fear. So legal or illegal, their fears have been reawakened.
Yeah, and I think that obviously anyone who's here with a sort of an irregular immigration status is worried about that. There are many immigrants who came here without papers, but who had children who were born here, and by virtue of being born here, they are now U.S. citizens. So, you know, the parents of those children have to worry about the prospect that they will be deported and separated from their children. And as you suggest, I think that the Muslim population, it's hard to know with certainty, but it seems to be the largest, the fastest growing immigrant group in the United States right now, certainly when judged along religious lines.
Let me turn to Tonette for another question.
Thank you. Turning to a bit more of a broad topic, the national model for the United States is E Pluribus Unum, normally translated as out of many one. The liberal historian Arthur Schlesinger in 1994 wrote that the danger in an excessive celebration of diversity in the United States is that it belittles unum and glorifies pluribus. Would you say this is a valid concern, especially today? And I suppose considering in the 1965 Act during that time.
I think that concern sort of sums up nicely the challenge that diversity represents to the country. Because, you know, I think that Schlesinger had an important point in that you don't want the United States reduced to sort of a series of communities that are closed off from one another and inwardly looking and lacking sort of a sense of commonality or community across them. I think that was his concern. Too much pluribus and not enough unum, not enough unity, too much plurality would certainly underscore that. I think the problem that advocates of pluralism, of multiculturalism, would raise is it all depends on what you mean by unum. If your definition of unity or unum is a white European America, then that's naive, you know, and that's what we were saying before. You're not going to have as much unity in a country where people are coming from all parts of the world as you're going to have in a country where everybody is the same and comes from the same parts of the world. Obviously, you're going to have more unum under those circumstances and less pluribus. So I think that the challenge that we face is to redefine unum, to redefine the idea of unity, and to make it a sort of more inclusive and accommodating term without denying that there have to be some elements that everybody shares, that, you know, some elements that really sort of define us communally together as a nation. I do think it would be a risk if we are not able to find those elements, if we are not able to identify as all of us as Americans. That would certainly lead to a kind of a fragmentation of our society, which would not be healthy.
We're also seeing in the aftermath of the election of Donald J. Trump, Tom Gelton, this resurgence of even white supremacists. We're seeing nativists, people again who would be hostile to the idea of immigration and a diverse society. What would you say to them with respect to immigration? My reaction would be by welcoming others legally, we are not detracting from those who are already here. We're just reaching out and enriching our own country. It is not really a zero-sum game, but it seems that many people see this as a zero-sum proposition.
Well, the first thing I would demonstrate is that the people who have come here from non-European, non-white backgrounds have already proven themselves to be good Americans. They're not subject to some sort of evaluation anymore. They've already demonstrated their loyalty to America, their identity as Americans, and I think it would be really unfair to them to sort of suggest that somehow they are less American than the rest of us. As you mentioned, I profile in depth a Muslim family from Libya, a Korean family, a Bolivian family, a young woman from El Salvador. And in each of those cases, they make clear to me, and I tell their stories pretty persuasively, I think, that they are in fact good, patriotic, productive Americans who feel American and demonstrate exactly the kind of generosity and open attitudes that all of us as Americans feel that our country is known for. So that's the first thing I would say to these nativists is take a look at the people who have come here, you know, from these non-traditional backgrounds, and you tell me what's wrong with them. You tell me what's un-American about them, because I think you just can't make that argument. The other thing is, and I don't mean to be triumphalist here or something like that, in a sense, it's too late to make that argument. I mean, the United States already is a diverse country. Right now, a majority of young Americans, Americans under the age of five, a majority of them are non-white, non-European. So that's the future. Diversity is our destiny, whether you approve of that or not. That's just a fact. And so I think that it's unrealistic and cruel to think that somehow at this point we can redefine this country to exclude half of the population.
And as you said, these immigrants and their children aren't asking for anything more, just the right to be here, follow the rules.
Exactly.
Just like everybody else. Exactly. Now a quick question from Tonette.
Kind of going along those lines, what role would you say education has helped play? Now, I remember reading in your book, Victor and Rena, their sons had a much easier time learning English. And I know the education system did help definitely with that because they were used to handling more immigrant children. What would your opinions be on the public school system then with regards to taking on children from first-generation families?
So that this is one example of where Fairfax County has done really, really well. And again, Fairfax County in this regard is something of a success story. You know, in the Fairfax County public school system, students speak more than 100 languages. So imagine the challenge that this presents to the school administrators and the teachers. I mean, there's no way you can provide instruction or translators or teachers who themselves have 100 different languages between them. You know, you have to find creative ways to sort of bring these kids into the classroom and help them learn English. And they have done it in really effective ways. The one high school in Fairfax County that I profile most intensely, Jeb Stuart High School, at what time the English as a second language program was the largest department in the high school, employed more teachers, had more resources, educated more students than any other department in the school. The schools made as a system a real commitment to educating immigrant children and did it really, really well. Another interesting thing about Fairfax County is that the Hispanic immigrants to Fairfax County, generally speaking, were far less educated than immigrants from other parts of the world. I think there is something like 80% of the immigrants from El Salvador, for example, had less than a high school education. So many of them were not even literate in Spanish, their native language, much less in English. So you're talking about with the Hispanic population in Fairfax County, particularly the Central American population, you're talking about a group of immigrants who were really disadvantaged in terms of their educational background. But what the data have shown is that with the passage of one or two generations, those handicaps largely disappear. So by the time you get to a second generation Hispanic immigrant, they're speaking English as well as anybody else. And in fact, the rates of English acquisition is as high for Hispanic children as it is for any other group of immigrant children. That's the amazing thing.
As we close, Tom Gelton, looking forward in a Trump administration, what are your concerns with respect to not just illegal immigration, but even legal immigration and the legacy of the 1965 legislation?
Well, to me, what the 1965 legislation did is it made a reality of this promise that America has held from its founding. You know, George Washington said, "The bosom of America is open to receive not only the opulent and respectable stranger, but the oppressed and persecuted of all nations and religions." We all know the inscription at the base of the Statue of Liberty, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free." This is the story that we have told ourselves since our founding as a country, that America is different, that America is a country that is open to the world. The truth is that for the first 200 years, we didn't do a very good job of living up to that promise. In the last 50 years, we have lived up to that promise. And in doing so, I think that we have exemplified these values that make America different among all the nations of the world. We really have put some meat on the bones of those promises of the American ideal. And I would just worry that now that we have really established the values that define America, that we not abandon them, that we not retreat from them.
The book is Nation of Nations, A Great American Immigration Story. The author, Tom Gelton, correspondent for National Public Radio. Tom, congratulations on your terrific book.
Thank you so much, Carol. It's really a pleasure to talk about it, as you can tell.
Indeed. We've enjoyed having you. Press Conference USA on The Voice of America was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guest. Our engineer was Thomas Blondet. Joining me on the program was Tonette Seitz, assistant producer in VOA's English division. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on The Voice of America.